This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And the way that and the mechanism, the architecture of entrapment is worth taking a look at. Also, we'll be speaking with Angie Imara, one of the organizers behind the My Jihad Project. And in the Middle East, as Israelis set up Zionist housekeeping once again post-election, Egypt's Morsi government appears on the verge of collapse. First this from the National Weather Service. Rain likely throughout the day, highs near 48, southwest winds 10 to 14, gusting up to 22. Tonight it's 50-50 so far as rain is concerned, with a low around 41, south winds 7 to 9. And tomorrow, the rain letting up a bit, mostly overcast, highs near 49, a light south wind. And for tomorrow night, overcast skies, lows around 39, rain still possible but not likely, and calm winds. For the alternative outlook, the waning gibbous fruit moon in Leo is 18 days old. Now is a good time for root vegetables, berries, bulbs, onions. Go ahead, try, you never know. Climate collapse may have some surprises in store for you. The biodynamic forecast has this moon in Leo, it's a fire sign. Good time to sow fruiting plants. Up, bare root fruit trees. Might as well get out there while they're still dormant. And the sidereal outlook, moon in Leo, dry and barren. Good time for maintenance and maybe some pruning for growth. Again, while things are still dormant. Moving into news from around Cascadia, the young Somali man, Mohamed Mohamed, defense arrested yesterday. There were a number of expert witnesses called. If you are unfamiliar with the enormous good and the enormous harm that expert witnesses can do, it's worth having getting a bit of a background before taking a look at what was entered into testimony yesterday. Some of what came out was fascinating. He spoke with Elizabeth Kaufman, who is an established and credible witness in this case, and pointed out that when they asked the federal agents posing as al-Qaeda operatives, asked the young man if he was ready to get the hell out of Dodge post the fancied explosion. What he said was that he hadn't packed and hadn't finished packing, and that he was doing his laundry, something which any one of us might have said, being asked if we were ready to leave on vacation, for example. Mahmoud's chief defense attorney, Stephen Sadie, someone we're all familiar with by this time, asked one of the experts if Mohamed met all the criteria of a terrorist at the time that he was recruited. And Sadie asked him later in testimony whether Mohamed posed a threat of violence before he first met the undercover FBI agents. And Sadie said, no, he did not. In other words, all of the fire and brimstone and mayhem that was part of this whole setup, this whole sting, this whole entrapment, none of it would have existed had the federal agents not entered the picture and set everything up, capitalizing on the fragile state of the young Somali man's situation. He was in an unfamiliar land. What many people throughout this trial have not taken into account is this was a very well-to-do family, and they had a decent upper-middle-class life in Somalia. That's a tough one to pull off. They wound up in a refugee camp in an absolute hellish place. They found their way to the United States of America expecting things to get better, and this is what happened. Welcome to Mogadishu. In Eugene, we heard yesterday that 16 of the activists who occupied the public speech area are going to demand jury trials. They were there with a group called Sleep on behalf of homeless people who were forced to sleep outside. And now we are going to be speaking with Joanna Bernstein, a community organizer with the Community Alliance of Lane County, or CALC. This organization is doing a one-night homeless count. And, of course, these two things work together. Amazing that the activists seeking to lessen the misery of the homeless sleeping outside in very cold times, and now this count, it's impossible not to take note. Good morning, Joanna. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So, CALC tonight, is going to be out and about in the streets counting the homeless. How long have you been doing this program? And I want to ask you also, what are your expectations this time? More people? Fewer people?
Well, first let me say that the One Night Homeless Count is actually a federally mandated program that happens once a year. It's a HUD program. That's the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And this is something that is actually going on nationwide today. And it's the Lane County Human Services Commission that's kind of officially in charge of coordinating the count. But so essentially the One Night Homeless Count happens every year, but what doesn't happen every year is the street count. So during the normal count, the non-street count, you know, you have people that are being served by, you know, missions and shelters and social service agencies filling out forms there. But with the street count, we're actually going out into the streets and talking to the folks that, you know, maybe aren't sleeping at the mission or aren't getting food boxes or accessing whatever social services. So Community Alliance of Lane County is the only organization in Lane County that is organizing the street count component. So that having been said, at first when I knew that we were the only ones that were, you know, going to tackle this this hurdle, I was, you know, I was excited, but I was also skeptical just because knowing that the unhoused are, for all intents and purposes, everywhere in Lane County, that's a lot of people to count. But fortunately, the turnout that we've had so far from volunteers and activists and, you know, like you said in your introduction, many of whom are currently unhoused and part of Sleep so far has been fantastic. We have about 25 or 30 volunteers that are in different parts of the county right now as we speak, and that count's going to be going on all the way up until midnight today.
What? The homeless seem everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And of course, the inescapable irony of activists who were in the free speech area on behalf of the homeless, of people sleeping outside, it being arrested,
right.
And then when you've got a federally backed program where there's forms to fill out, as far as we know, people don't get arrested. I do want to ask you, what sort of numbers are you expecting this year?
I mean, we really, it's hard to know exactly. You know, I can't speak exactly to what the numbers were last year, and really you can't even compare this year's numbers to last year's numbers because, like I said, last year was not a street count year. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a social service agency count year. So really, mm-hmm. to have kind of a comprehensive or a more accurate comparison, you'd probably want to compare this year's numbers with the numbers from 2011, which were the last time that the street count took place. But I'm expecting that they're going to be higher than they were before. Just, I mean, I've only been here in this Eugene, Oregon community for a little under 3 years, but everything that I've heard from people that are, everything from people that are currently out in the streets, you know, that don't have a place to sleep tonight, from to other folks that, you know, work at similar kind of community-based organizations or social service agencies or nonprofits that tell me that they feel like the number of people on the streets has just, you know, continued to really risen a lot over the years. So I'm expecting to see high numbers. I can't say exactly what those numbers will be, but I'm expecting higher numbers than probably the 2011 count, if I had to take a wild guess.
Joanna, thank you so much for that. If you are listening or down in that area, it's important to connect with the communities who do find themselves disenfranchised and freezing cold on the streets and sleeping under doorways. Joanna Bernstein, my guest, is a community organizer with the Community Alliance of Lane County. We're very pleased to have her with us this morning. Thanks for that, Joanna.
Thanks for the opportunity.
We'd like to move right along. There are a great many other stories out there, but right now, coming again as the defense rests in the Mohamed Mahoud trial, we're going to speak now with Angie Imara, one of the key central organizers behind a project you may or may not have heard of. It's called My Jihad. It's a campaign to illuminate, demystify, and defuse a highly charged word, jihad, which came up again and again during this trial that we have just witnessed. With each iteration of the term during the trial on the part of the government, of the prosecution, the word gained greater and greater nuance of violence, without any understanding or any effort to define what it really meant to true Muslims. Good morning, Angie. I'm so glad that you could be with us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me and for sharing about this campaign.
Well, I want to first ask you to give us a definition of the word jihad and how Muslims practice it in daily life. And then I do want to ask you about the My Jihad campaign, how it works. I think it's wonderful. There are ads, they're on buses often, they're all over the place, and it's average. You don't have to be Muslim. You can stand up on your hind legs and say, whatever it is. In my case, it would be hunter-gatherer food forest, or My Jihad.
Yes. You pretty much said it in a nutshell. Jihad is truly defined by any Muslim anywhere in the world as struggling in the way of God. And that struggling is to get to a better place, and that's what is meant by way of God. So anything from the daily struggles of getting to work and making a living for your families to getting over or overcoming a sickness or a deficiency in health, raising kids with special needs, as in my case, also getting over the loss of loved ones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fighting for justice, even within your own schools, people trying to be allowed to pray in their schools, students. All different ways to do jihad, which is essentially just to struggle. And so through the My Jihad campaign, we're everyone asks, where's that moderate Muslim voice? Here we are through this campaign.
So the young man, this young Somali man, apparently had written for a magazine called Jihad Recollections, this came out in the trial, and in this case, the word jihad had been co-opted and corrupted by a very violent subgroup. The Muslims that I know would reject entirely as
yes.
representing the religion. So, yet the term jihad, no effort whatsoever was made to make that clear distinction. And the fact that he'd written for Jihad Recollections was made hay, as it were, with this. It seems that the term needs to be reclaimed.
Absolutely. Anytime, anything.
I have to point something out at this moment. I'm under a bit of pressure here regarding time.
Okay.
We are, in fact, out of time. We will put a link to this your website, and I'd like to invite you back because there's a lot more to talk about here.
Sure. Yes, please. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that. My guest has been Angie Imara with My Jihad. We'll put the website there. It's fascinating. This has been our Cascadia for Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. Kurt Lauer engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
flashpoints. Are Congress and the President really serious about meaningful and humane immigration reform? We're going to explore that. Also, another deadly fire in a garment factory in Bangladesh. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Well, the president was in Las Vegas to announce the time has come for a sweeping overhaul of the U.S. immigration system. The time has come, he said, for common sense, comprehensive immigration reform. He noted that the current system was out of date and badly broken. And he said, the good news, this in Las Vegas, the good news is that for the first time in many years, Republicans and Democrats seem ready to tackle the problem together. Joining us to talk about the problem is Megan Ortiz. She's the publisher of Viva Latino. She's been following the story very closely and immigration reform for some time. She's got a recent piece. Let me read you a little bit about it, and then we want to bring in Megan Ortiz. She raises some important issues. She writes, and they're off. The road to immigration reform starts today, announced one organization email. They are talking about a set of immigration reform principles, not an actual bill. That was released today by a bipartisan group of eight senators. What's interesting about all the congratulatory messages that ask people to support immigration reform is that they lack an actual analysis of what it is in the principles. Since the principles include a pathway to citizenship, it's assumed to be good enough. Well, Megan Ortiz, welcome to Flashpoints.
Hi, thank you, Dennis. Great to be on.
Well, it's good to have you with us. First of all, give us your overall reaction. The president spoke today, then we had that bipartisan committee with Charlie Schumer,